Okay, so as Paul said, I'm going to be talking about how we extract cortical surface models using the collection of tools that we developed. And Arthur already mentioned quite a bit about why we're interested in the cerebral cortex and in finding surface models of it. And just to describe a little bit more detail about the kind of work that we do, when we think about the cerebral cortex, it's this thin layer of gray matter that encloses the telencephalon. And we can model its surface as being a two-dimensional sheet. And so if we think about the sheet as being closed off at the brainstem, we can then describe the cortical surface as being homeomorphic to a sphere. And so in the work that we do, we want to have representations of the cortex that represent this topology. And just to highlight again some of the reasons why we want these cortical surface representations, we can use them for a variety of applications in neuroimaging, such as making atlases of the brain, like you just saw, or studying variability among subjects, looking at source localization, and also for visualizing brain activity on the surface itself. And so the problem that we address in our work is that if we're given an MRI of the human head, we want to be able to find a representation of this cortical surface that has the right topology, and we want to do this in a method, using a method that's as automated as possible. And so what I'll be describing today is a sequence of low-level techniques that we developed that address this problem. It goes without saying that there's been quite a bit of work in this field in the last decade and beyond. And you've had the opportunity this week to hear from quite a few of the researchers who did some of the early work and continue to do really good work in this field. So I'm not going to go into too much detail about this just due to time. It also is worth mentioning that there are several other cortical surface modeling packages that others have developed that provide models with the correct topology. So I've mentioned a few of those on the slide. So to get into a little more detail about what we're actually looking at, this is a histological slice, or a photographic slice of from a brain atlas, where the white and gray matter have been stained to enhance the contrast. And you can see that the boundaries between white and gray are very clear in this image. It's very easy to understand where the boundary is between the cortical surface and between the white and gray matter. If we look at an MRI of a similar slice from a different subject, it's a little less clear. Also, probably with the lights on, it's even less clear. But we do have a good boundary between white and gray, although it's obscured somewhat by shading artifacts and noise and other confounding factors. And so just to go into more detail on these, one of the problems we have with the MRI is that when you have an intensity value that you measure for a particular location in the brain, this intensity value doesn't correspond to a specific type of tissue. So if we want to understand what we're looking at in the image, we have to do a little bit more than just look at the intensity value. If we remove the skull and scalp from the head, we can get a better understanding and restrict ourselves just to looking at white, gray, and CSF. But in that case, we still have other problems such as noise and shading artifacts and partial volume effects. Partial volume effects result from the fact that we have finite resolution in the MRI, which is not of sufficient resolution to capture the anatomical detail of the image. And so as a result, when we're looking at voxels in the brain, such as I've simulated here, you have this effect of local averaging, where we have two types of tissue that may be present when you have an anatomical boundary crossing through the voxels. And as a result, what you get is an image where, in the image that we get, you don't necessarily have a solid understanding of the boundary between, for example, the walls of where two sulci will touch, or between even the hemispheres. In addition to this, we have image non-uniformity effects, which result from imperfections in the design of the scanners themselves, or from susceptibility effects in the tissues being measured. We also have measurement noise, which confounds us when you try and classify what types of tissues are present in the image. Now, when we perform classification on the MRI, what all of these factors cause is that when we finally generate a surface model from the brain using the low-level techniques that we use, we'll wind up with a surface that will typically have lots of topological handles. And this is a close-up version of an image that you'll see again later. And what these handles, the problem that these handles cause is that we can no longer map the cortex to a two-dimensional plane. And this then prevents us from using methods such as Paul's or others' work where you want to make mappings between two different subjects because you need to have the same topology in order to do that. So this is the sequence that we developed in order to arrive at models of the cortex that have the right topology. And we begin with the MRI and then perform skull stripping, non-uniformity correction to correct for the bias effects. We then classify every voxel that's in the brain according to tissue type. We then perform a separation of the image into cerebrum and cerebellum, which allows us to then model the cerebral cortex. And before we generate the surfaces, we apply a topological correction algorithm, which removes any topological handles that may be present in the binary volume. And then finally, we also have a parameterization method, which was developed by Nan Joshi and Richard Leahy at USC, which we use to parameterize the cortex and arrive at a two-dimensional parameterized model that we can then use in these Atlas generation methods. So to start off with, the first thing that we do, as I mentioned, is to remove the skull and scalp. And the reason for doing this, in addition to simplifying the complexity of our problem, is that if we look at the whole head, we of course have all these other regions that may serve as decoys in terms of labeling the tissues that we have. And in addition to this, there are a number of applications where you want to just have the brain. For example, if you're trying to align two brains together, you want the brains to be aligned and not the noses or some other feature of the head. So it's beneficial if you only have the brain when you do your image registration. The actual technique that we use is based on a combination of anisotropic diffusion filtering, which enhances, it de-emphasizes certain image gradient. So the first thing we do in our method is to apply an anisotropic diffusion filter, which smooths out some of the smaller gradients in the image, but still leaves us with a nice boundary between the skull and the brain. We can then perform edge detection, which will identify the contours between the brain and the rest of the skull. And then from here, we go on to perform a series of morphological operations, which separate the brain from the rest of the image in the edge map and provide us with, finally, a nice segmented brain mask. So once we have the brain skull stripped, we can then continue on to correct for the bias effects and perform tissue classification. And to do this, we use a mixture model where we are modeling what the measurements that we get out of the scanner are based on the notion that all that's left in the brain is gray matter, white matter, and cerebrospinal fluid. So in doing this, we assume that we have either voxels that contain only one type of tissue, and in that case, we can assume that the true value that we want to see from the image is one of three tissue values. In the cases of mixed voxels, we have linear combinations of tissue voxels, which is modeled with this equation, where we have an alpha parameter, which is a mixture that gives a value between 0 and 1. We then take this model and add on a spatially smooth gain field, as well as some additive white Gaussian noise. And then from these, we derive probability density functions that allow us to model what we measure based on the bias field and the tissue content. So from here, we can continue on. If we assume some local tissue prior of how much tissue content there is of particular types of tissue in some region of the image, and we can then arrive at a model of what we would measure in the brain with the scanner. And from here, this is just a more graphical description of the mathematics. So the model that we have, as I mentioned, we have these three pure tissue types, which are modeled as Gaussian distributions. And then in addition to these, we have the mixture classes, which are actually integrated Gaussians, as you can see here. And then we can adjust the heights of these Gaussians based on the tissue content in the image, which gives us the density function when we sum them together. And we also have this bias parameter, which is the spatially varying gain field, which adjusts the scale factor on the distribution. So the way that we put this into use is that we look at the data in the image. We compute tissue class means and noise variance based on the histogram of the global image. And then we look at smaller regions in the image. And so, as you see here, we have this small block of data. And this is actually a three-dimensional block. Within this block, we can assume that the bias that's present in that block block is constant, or we make the assumption that the block has constant bias, we can then fit our density function to the histogram of that block. And in doing this fit, we arrive at estimates of both the relative contribution of different tissue types in that block, as well as how much bias there is in that block relative to the rest of the image. From this, we can then, by moving this block throughout the image, we arrive at a number of estimates of the spatial variance in the, or arrive at a number of estimates of the gain field. And then from this, we can estimate a tricubic B-spline. We can fit a tricubic B-spline to these estimates in order to arrive at a model of the bias field. So as you see here, this is an example of one image that from which we've computed a bias field, which has a cubic B-spline. We can then divide this out of the image in order to correct for the bias effects. So once we've corrected for the non-uniformity in the image, we can then take that parameter out of our model and then go on to develop a statistical classifier for labeling each type of tissue in the image, or labeling each voxel according to tissue types. And so what we do is to take the probability of the measurement given a particular labeling and combine that with the spatial prior. And what this spatial prior does is to encourage local similarity. So in the brain, you expect for gray matter to be next to gray matter or for white matter to be next to white matter, but you don't expect for white matter to be next to CSF. So this model penalizes configurations of voxels where you have local neighborhoods of dissimilar tissue types. And what this does is encourage local smoothness in the image so that we can arrive at nice boundaries between the white and gray matter in the image. And so we combine the prior models together to form a maximum a posteriori classifier, which we solve using the iterated conditional modes algorithm. So what you see here is a slice of data where you've labeled it with a maximum likelihood segmentation, and these classes represent, or these different colors represent the types of tissue, where yellow is white matter and green is gray matter, and the purple is partial volume combinations of white and gray matter. And then when we apply the ICM algorithm, we arrive at a much smoother labeling of the brain. And then these labels themselves, as well as the measures of relative tissue content within each voxel, allow us to make maps of tissue changes in subjects, make maps of variation across populations, or also to generate cortical surface models. So to actually generate the cortical surface models, we start by taking the skull strip brain and performing a segmentation to identify the cerebrum. And this is based on doing a warp using air from Roger Woods, which warps a labeled atlas onto the brain and allows us to quite easily remove this cerebellum. So we arrive at just the model of the cerebrum, from which we can then generate a model of the cerebral cortex. Now, as I said before, the problem with generating these models, and you can actually see probably on this image a few of them, is that we'll arrive at a number of topological handles on the surface. And so, as you can see here, they may even be so bad that they join the two hemispheres together. And we need to be able to remove these handles in order to do a two-dimensional mapping of the surface. And so we developed a novel approach to doing this that actually models the object using graph theory. And so what we do is try to capture topological handles as graphs. And this is a simple example just showing a configuration of voxels that represents a torus. If we have the torus oriented vertically, then what our algorithm does, let me explain a little more about the algorithm first. Essentially, we look at adjacent slices of data in the object. And so this is a binary representation of the object. And within each slice, we looked at the connected components within the slice. And so what you see here is that for the foreground of the object, within each slice along the z-axis, we wind up with a node corresponding to each connected component that's within the individual slice. We then look at how these components connect to each other across the slices, and the strength of these connections is represented as the weight of an edge that joins the two nodes in the graph. And so what we arrive at is a model where between the foreground and the background graph will capture all the topological handles as cycles in the graph. And this was one of the conjectures that we made in our paper, and it was recently proven by Abrams, Fishkind, and Carrie Preeb. And so then what we go on to do is, based on this understanding of how we can capture the topology of the object, is to remove voxels from the object. In this case, we're either removing voxels in the foreground or adding voxels in the background. And this way, we can break cycles in the graph. So in the simple example of the torus, we can either remove a voxel from the handle here, or we can fill in the hole, depending on which way is more appropriate for the structure. And the way that our algorithm works is to apply a maximal spanning tree based on the weights of the edges. And so in this way, we can ensure that we cut through the smallest portions of the image or fill the smallest holes in the binary segmentation in order to make the least change to the object. We also apply this algorithm, because it is axis dependent, we apply it iteratively along each of the three axes in order to remove the topological handles. So the result of this, when we look at the surface that I showed you earlier, is that in the cortex model that we generated automatically, there were 129 topological handles. And you can see a number of them in different positions in the image. When we apply the correction algorithm, all the handles disappear. And the other thing to note here is that we did apply the correction to the actual binary volume. So the volumetric data has the right topology, in addition to the surface that's generated has the correct topology. So from here, we can continue on to do modeling of the cortex, where we apply this parameterization method, which gives us two-dimensional parameterization of the cortex. We can then define sulcal lines using the tools that are also available in the software. These lines provide landmarks that can be used in fluid matching methods, such as those developed by Paul Thompson. And those are the things that I'll be demoing in the lab later today. In addition to this, there's some other functionality that we've included in the software, including extraction of the skull and scalp, and these are models that are useful in MEG and EEG and are compatible with some of the software that was developed by Richard Leahy's group at USC. And as Arthur mentioned, also our software can be used for looking at atlases of different structures in the brain, different types of brains as well. So I'm actually going to stop there and do a brief demo to try and entice you to walk over to Lonnie later today. So this is what the interface looks like. And I'm not going to actually run through the processing here for the sake of time. The entire cortical sequence with topology correction and bias field correction takes about 15 minutes to generate a surface. And it's all contained within the program. So this is an example of a skull-stripped brain. You can see the original brain. And it takes about 5 to 10 seconds to remove the skull. And this is a 3D view that's included in the software. Generated automatically, there were 129 topological handles. And you can see a number of them in different positions in the image. When we apply the correction algorithm, all the handles disappear. And the other thing to note here is that we did apply the correction to the actual binary volume. So the volumetric data has the right topology, in addition to the surface that's generated has the correct topology. So from here, we can continue on to do modeling of the cortex, where we apply this parameterization method, which gives us two-dimensional parameterization of the cortex. We can then define sulcal lines using the tools that are also available in the software. These lines provide landmarks that can be used in fluid matching methods, such as those developed by Paul Thompson. And those are the things that I'll be demoing in the lab later today. In addition to this, there's some other functionality that we've included in the software, including extraction of the skull and scalp. And these are models that are useful in MEG and EEG and are compatible with some of the software that was developed by Richard Leahy's group at USC. And as Arthur mentioned, also our software can be used for looking at atlases of different structures in the brain, different types of brains as well. So I'm actually going to stop there and do a brief demo to try and entice you to walk over to Lonnie later today. So this is what the interface looks like. And I'm not going to actually run through the processing here for the sake of time. The entire cortical sequence with topology correction and bias field correction takes about 15 minutes to generate a surface. And it's all contained within the program. So this is an example of a skull-stripped brain. You can see the original brain. And it takes about 5 to 10 seconds to remove the skull. And this is a 3D view that's included in the software. We can also generate surface models. And so this is one of the cortical surfaces that we generated with the parameterization method I described earlier. And then some of the other tools that we have in here include things such as curve editing, where we can draw these control lines to delineate different sulci on the surface. We can draw it quite quickly using Dijkstra's algorithm weighted by the curvature, the local curvature of the image, which allows us to follow the curves quite closely, as you just saw. So I'll conclude there and answer any questions.